This is CliffCentral.com.
All right, let's get into this. There's lots of stuff to talk about. I'm excited about the Burning Platform this morning. First of all, because we get to reconnect with Wayne Duvenage, who we haven't seen in a little while. And he is the man when it comes to talking about social activism, about civil, what would we call it, civil society and the response of civil society to government, to the private sector, to all kinds of things and all kinds of places. How are you, Wayne? Nice to see you, man.
Yeah, good to be here.
You always sound like you're not, but you are. I can see from your smile.
Okay.
Yeah, so Pumi and I were very pleased to see that Sia had arranged for you to come in and talk to us this morning. First of all, what did you think of the elections? Were you happy?
Yeah, well, you know, they're behind us. I think it was the lead up to it was just listening to so much nonsense that was happening. Every time a politician moved his lips, you just saw the lying and then the false promises that were coming out. Mm-hmm. So, you know, to get back to normality again, I think that was great for us. I think it was a foregone conclusion. What was quite interesting is how very few of the smaller parties actually made a dent or came out of it with what we thought and hoped for, some more collaborative party mixing and strength that would come out of the smaller parties. But it didn't happen. Didn't materialize.
No, certainly
at all.
Not. Yeah. So we've got the Burning Platform. It's brought to you by Nando's every Thursday. It's our chance to catch up on current affairs. And I think there are probably a few things that we need to get into from your point of view, yeah. First of all, since we've got you with us. You've written an article recently called Change is Happening,
yeah.
And positive people can decide to hashtag stay and fix South Africa. So why should people stay and fix South Africa? Let's hear it from you this morning.
Well, first of all, as I said in the article, Gareth, you know, there's a lot that's happened, and we get calls all the time. We get mails, we get messages on our website, a lot of frustration. I think this country is in a state of depression almost. We were expecting a lot when Ramaphosa assumed the reins of the country just after he won those ANC elections. And yet it was very slow, and I think we're quite impatient as South Africans. We want change quickly when we see it, and we need it very quickly as well. But when it doesn't come, I think we get a bit frustrated. And yet behind the scenes, and we know because we see what's happening. We're working with the SIU, the Special Investigations Unit, Assets Forfeiture Units, and we see that there are a number of good people and good things happening in the enforcement processes. And while it's not happening quick enough, you cannot just flick a switch. You've got to go through the motions and make sure that you are getting your ducks in a row when it comes to the enforcement that has to happen and the people that have to be locked up, so to speak. We want to see them behind bars, and it's frustrating that nothing's happening. But I think if you put everything together, you see a president whose hands are still tied. He's got this factionalism to deal with. You see it in the party lists. He cannot be accused of going on a witch hunt, and they've got to do it properly. So we needed the elections to get behind us. And then you see what's happened at SARS.
Yeah.
You see what's happened at NPA, Shamila Batoya. You know, she only got in there in February. It's a very short period. We're also trying to set up some time with her because I think she needs to start telling the country what's happening. A new boss at Hawks, Willie Hoffmeyer now at the Assets Forfeiture Unit. Mm-hmm. And so we start seeing the foundations being put in place that will help us deal with this big scourge of corruption. If we can just get something happening, then we believe that it is going to start happening, but it's not going to happen overnight.
Well, you are one of the people who put your money where your mouth is. I mean, you left a private business career that was really a good record. You handled some very big companies. You were in charge of some important decision making, and you decided that it was time for you to go into this world of you know, civil society, which is a lot less rewarding personally in some ways, but it's a lot more rewarding in terms of the difference you can make. And you've proven. And there are only a few other people that can say that they've done this. You've proven that it is possible for you in this situation, and then other people in other situations, to gather around you a force of like-minded, ordinary people, you know, some of them with resources, some of them without, some of them old, young, black, white, whoever it might be, and gather them together to get a momentum going.
Mm.
And you've done this extremely effectively. I mean, ARTA started off really against e-tolls, which we all still think are a revolting incursion on our liberties, and an extortive force in government to try and grab hold of what little remains of what people work hard for every month. It's bad enough that we spend, what, 4 to 5 months of the year working for government, whether we like it or not. Yeah. But then there's also this all these insidious taxes, and Eskom is part of that, and you know, the e-tolls and the petrol levies, and we see all of these things going on. So you did a lot there. Yeah. Now, of course, ARTA has become the organization undoing tax abuse, which means, and I'm glad you brought up SARS, your focus really is on what government does with the money that it takes from us at gunpoint. Because that's what tax is.
Yeah.
It's taxes is the monopoly of violence from the state side in terms of forcing you, without any option on your part, to part with money that you've worked hard for and give it to them. And what they do with it after that, most people have no say in.
Yeah. It's actually sick, especially when government makes policy that is so irrational and so out of touch with being in the best interests of society. So on the tolling one, which was where my frustration really became heightened, especially as I headed up a car rental company, and this gross plan of just stick these tags in your windows, make sure your account is in positive with us, and just pay us money. And what we saw when we started to unpack this, as we found out about it, was firstly, it was so ludicrous that the whole fleet industry was not aware of this process, and that government has to, by law, engage meaningfully, and they hadn't done that. So when we found out about it and then started to dig deeper, we saw a scheme that was, I can only call it as born in sin. It was fraught with inefficiencies. It was government going to be the beneficiaries of a very deceitful campaign, and grossly so. You know, around the world, the administration costs on tolling of this nature is about 10%. This one is 61%. So when it costs 2.6 billion rand a year to finance a road upgrade, which, by the way, was double what it should have been, we could see that the road construction costs should never have come in at 18 billion rand for this upgrade. It shouldn't be anything more than 9 billion. But nonetheless, so now you've got this 18 billion rand bond and a little bit more for the gantries. And then they're going to slap another 1.6 billion rand to pay ETC in the contract. Now, that is just absurd, and you have to refuse. And this is where civil disobedience is called for by society. And for the first time, I think we were quite encouraged that the middle class South African citizen, the road user, the vehicle owner, this is the part of society that is scared of government, is scared to go to jail.
Aren't they the law abiding citizens? Yeah. I mean, it's not if you look at all the illegal people who are driving around on the road, and there are a lot of those, and they occasionally get pulled over by the Metro Police. You see them there trying to explain their way through it.
Yeah.
But these are ordinary middle-class people who have a job or have a little business of their own. They try to comply with the law because they're afraid of being arrested and being fined. Exactly. And, you know, I had not so long ago, we had Howard Dombowski in here, who puts the fear of God into everyone when it comes to, like, breaking the rules of the road, Pumi. And most people just want to comply so they can live their lives. Exactly. They can be as free as possible. And, and the best way to make sure you're free as possible is to make sure that you've ticked the boxes with the government so they don't come knocking in your door and use that monopoly of violence against you. So have we figured out with e-tolls yet? Because I don't want to leave this one alone while we've got you here. Have we figured out who the beneficiaries of the scheme would have been? Who these people were with their fingers in the till?
Yeah, look, the way people who should not be earning funds get the money out is through companies, and they get it through offshore accounts. That's the best way to do it. So ETC is an Austrian-owned company, and Had they got their way, and thankfully citizens did stand up and said not on our watch and became civilly disobedient and stopped ETC from earning about R1 billion a year. So all ETC got instead of 1.6 billion was about R600 million. And they can barely cover the collection costs just with that. So we have stopped
failure.
That money.
It's a failure.
Yeah, from going offshore. What the silver bullet was and where the deals were done, we haven't been able to find those, but that's not the point. The point here is the irrational scheme was stopped for the right reasons through a very, very concerted civil disobedience campaign. And well done to society for standing up here and being counted, because they took the risk of potentially having summonses, and a number of them did. You know, we're defending 2,000 people who've got summonses, but as you could see, the heat was on over the elections, and the president tapped Sanral on the shoulders, so to speak, in inverted commas, I must say, because we're having a big court case with them on this matter. They've gone quiet. They put out this quick decision, urgent board meeting to suspend legal action against society. And this is war against your citizens when you start summonsing thousands and thousands. And there are 3 million motorists in default to Sanral.
And they can't arrest us all, right?
They're never going to get there. So, just to finish your point there, I mean, this is government decision-making gone wrong. And we believe the scheme is going to be pulled, because you can't half toll. You can't be half pregnant on this. You either toll or you don't. You can't sort of reduce the rates. I mean, they're barely covering the collection costs, as I said. And we've seen very recently Bladen Zamande and others within authority have indicated to us they'll be meeting soon to make a decision to find a solution. So I think we've won this one, and well done to society.
Correct. Congratulations.
You know, I'm a big fan of an active civil society.
Yeah.
I talk about it with the guys all the time.
Right.
For you guys at Outer, what is it that was the lever that you think you were able to pull to get? Because honestly, when you think about society, is far bigger than the politicians. That's why we have to get society behind these big ideas. What was the big lever that you were able to pull to allow the ordinary citizens to say, look, I am going to participate in this thing?
Well, you know, for me personally, when I left the corporate world, it was because you can't do both. This requires full-time attention. I remember going into meetings and the media, you need the media. The media have to tell the story. Civil society relies heavily on the media. And I remember going to meetings, getting calls as Sanral had put out a statement and saying, look, we need your Outer's input on this issue. And I'd say, yeah, look, I'll get to you tonight. Let me just get home. I've got a couple of meetings. And they'd be saying, no, we're going to print in a couple of hours. We need your input now. And it was just really getting tough. You had to move fast. You had to be available at all the times for the media. That's one of the things that has been entrenched into our psyche.
Mm-hmm.
So it was a case of going to my bosses and saying, look, after 6 months, you know, we'd won that interdict. It was madness. People were loving this. The news were loving it. Every time Etold hit the headlines in the media in that 2012 period and Kandler was there, everybody's fed up with government. It would sell newspapers. So we had to make ourselves available and just couldn't do both. So for me, it was a decision of either do it properly, and that was full time, and I sincerely believe that government would come to its senses, that sanity would prevail within a few months, and this thing would go away, because it just couldn't work, everything we saw before that even launched. So I said to my boss, look, I'd been doing this role for a number of years at Avis, had fun doing it. It was a great organization. I was going to take a break, do the civil activism for a while, get this headache out of the way of society, and then go back into the corporate world. Well, it doesn't work like that. 7 years later. And we had to make a business of it. And when I say a business in inverted commas, we had to make it work because for the first 3 years, I lived off my savings. You know, there was no income. Government lent heavily on businesses that were supporting us initially.
Right.
Business ran for the hills, and I was very angry
because
about
business,
that.
Because business lacks courage in an enormous way in this
morals
country.
Morals and courage.
We never talk about this.
It pissed me off.
You know, we've got Business Unity South Africa. And see, business calling him right now. Business calling in to say, please, Wayne, just
stop
shut
it.
Up.
Stop, stop it, Wayne.
Yeah, I'm a big business that does have small
We've got
balls,
these
I'm
business telling. Unions
big
and these.
Big business small balls.
And these, they do. They have small balls. And these associations of CEOs and, you know, all these people who get together and congratulate themselves on being absolutely
that,
spineless.
Well,
yeah, it's just annoying.
And your organization started out with the ETOL. At the crux of it, right?
Yes.
But you have a bigger
yes.
Much you've broader, given yourself
much broader
a bigger
mandate,
mandate because it's around tax and just general tax abuse, which is, I think, an easy one to tackle in South Africa because it's out there. We talk about it.
Yeah.
What we don't talk about is we don't talk about how business in South Africa is, you know, the other hand.
Yeah.
In this abusive relationship with people and corruption, that conversation does not get had as much as it should be had.
Well, why do you think CEOs and business leaders, and some of them obviously are decent people, but there are a lot of them who are not, who are very corporate, very sheltered, very protected, and they're happy, they're on the take. So why the hell wouldn't they want a beneficial relationship
and
with government?
This is what happens. Government has the checkbook. Of the massive amounts of cash being spent on big
they're the biggest spenders in the
projects,
country, sure.
And business is the other side of the corruption coin. They're doing the deals. They're setting up the front companies. They are the ones
who they're taking the money out of the system.
Yeah. And as I said, for instance, just the building of this freeway, this upgrade, this one extra lane that was put on, 18 billion rand for 185 kilometers. It's just ludicrous. It's absurd. And the construction industry knows it. And what happened? Eventually, the Competition Commission catches them, slap on the wrist, literally a 1.4 billion rand fine between all of them, which was nothing. And they get off the hook. And when the Construction Industry Development Board, these are the institutions that are supposed to watch over them, starts to investigate, what do? They tap the CEO on the shoulder and say, stop investigating. He says, I'm not going to stop investigating. This is a serious issue. And he gets fired. I mean, this is the type of stuff that's been happening all along. And when we try to engage with the civil engineers to say, you guys need to now raise your voices because something's wrong here, what do? This is literally what happened.
What do they do?
We said we need to engage because we would like some help to look into these figures. And they were telling us things like, we cannot assist you. If SANRAL finds out, we'll be taken off their procurement rolls and records. They are the biggest spender of money in the country. So sorry, ARTA, we're not going to assist you. These are the construction industry body. It just
made
me sick.
Craven, they are. They're weak, spineless, and sycophantic.
So where, Wayne, do we find the cross point? Because these are individuals. Those organizations are made up of the individuals that are part of the civil society that we're saying needs to be organized, needs to be vigilant, needs to hold the government. Where do we find that intersection?
Well, this is where I think society becomes powerful now with social media. And another thing is, we could not have brought this fight around without good social media.
And without people contributing. And this is a big deal too. And we'll give the details of that later on, because I've been, you know, like a one or two time contributor to ARTA. And I think a lot of people should be regular ones. If you're going to put your money where your mouth is, like you did, then at least have the balls to put some money in there as well, practically support it.
Yeah. So
social media?
Social media was big. It enabled us to get the message out there, and the media, the mainstream media. It was amazing how they took the story, and the public heard it, listened, and participated. So I think we've got to start putting more pressure on businesses that are exposed in their complicitness in corruption, in doing deals with government that they shouldn't have done. And this is where we've got to, I think, build more solid platforms, robust platforms where we can share information that exposes those organizations. And if we had those in place a long time ago, I think we would have been able to expose the KPMGs, the McKinseys and those issues a lot earlier. We'd be able to expose businesses that are involved in 14 million rand projects to build 20 toilets, for instance, in the Eastern Cape quicker. And that's the work that we've got to go and do a lot more of going forward.
So that addresses, I think, partly Pumi's question about what the role of business is in all of this. But let's just take business out for a second, because even if we had an angelic and ideal utopian situation where business was just doing what business is meant to do, government still has public money.
Yeah.
They're the ones who take our tax money, and they can disperse it. And as discussed already, they're the biggest spenders in the economy. Yeah. Now, these guys have supposedly got, in the law and in the structure of government, the three branches of government, there are checks and balances, there are meant to be budgetary constraints, they're all very much tied into procurement policies, and yet the corruption happens. Now, OUTA is undoing tax abuse. What do, in all of your research and investigation, and there are people who do this in private business and people in public policy, you are required to do this. Where is our tax money spent? Why is so much of it wasted? And when we see all the need in this country, we see houses that people are living in that they shouldn't be in, shacks. We see people without water and electricity in some areas. We see people in far-flung rural communities that don't even have roads to get there.
Yeah.
Why is this money not being appropriated by government and then put to use in the right ways?
What we saw throughout the Zuma era was a complete plundering of the public purse. There's two levels of it, and we'll get to local government, but you don't want to know what's going on there. It's sad. It's so sick where you live in rural areas, where all these municipalities out there, that money that is not getting to the infrastructure that needs to be maintained. The roads, as you say, bridges just to get kids across rivers to schools and so forth. It's absolutely mind-boggling. Toilets, classrooms, clinics. That is wasted, and some of that comes through from national government. So at national government level, we've got enough money. Let me put it that way. The 1.6 trillion rand and 1.2 trillion rand a number of years ago, this money needs to find its way into government departments, and it needs to be spent wisely. It needs to go back into infrastructure. It needs to go back into society, because it is society's money, and it needs to be spent with their best interest in mind. This is what's lacking, Gareth, is where you have a government that's not saying, well, what is in the best interests of the people with this money that we've got? How do we spend it wisely? And when they don't, that's when you see ports collapsing. The port efficiency starts slowing down. It costs money now for businesses to get stuff through the ports. That's where you see Transnet. I mean, I remember we used to move hundreds of cars, thousands of cars between cities by train. We stopped doing that because it just became so inefficient.
And
so
other goods. Other goods. I mean, this is why our roads are so horribly affected at the moment by enormous trucks and you know, massive freight that's carried from Durban to Joburg and Joburg to Cape Town.
Shouldn't be going by road. Be going by rail, efficiency very quickly. And so you start to have this collapse because, as we've heard in Transnet, as we've seen in these other state-owned institutions, they're not building and doing things for the best interest of society. These Medupi and Kusile power stations that have taken 5 years longer at four times the price, that's money.
Well, I'm going to bring up a story I heard just the other day that illustrates this very well. So we have three submarines in South Africa. You know this story.
I think one's working.
This is the point. All right. So we bought three submarines from the French. Yeah. They cost us an enormous amount of money. This was all part of the arms deal all those years ago. So one of them, this woman who was cleaning it, plugged the vacuum cleaner. This is a true story. She plugged the vacuum cleaner into a matrix that shorted out the whole thing.
Yeah.
It doesn't work anymore. Yeah. It's parked in Simonstown. It's gathering mussels on its hull. It's of absolutely no use to us because she shorted out and killed the entire electrical system of the submarine by plugging in a vacuum cleaner in the wrong place. This is absolutely true. You can look it up. You can Google it. It was all revealed in parliamentary reports. It's goddamned embarrassing to the nth degree. The second one we had all these Navy cadets that we then had to train to use the submarine. So we sent them to France. Again, more expenditure. Massive. We've now got these three submarines. One of them's already blown out because of the vacuum cleaner. The other two are sitting in Simonstown waiting to be used. So we send, I think it was 50 to 100 cadets off to France to be trained. The French try for about 3 or 4 weeks. They say, I'm sorry. They send them all back and say, these guys are untrainable. There's nothing we can do with them. You've got to find some other way. So we get them back here and we go, shit, let's send them to India because maybe they can train them. So they go off to India. India send them back after a little while and say, these people are untrainable. We can't, there's nothing we can do with these cadets. Their quality is poor. Their basic education skills are zero. They're illiterate. They're innumerate. There's nothing we can do with them. Send them back home. So what we have is just nobody to run the thing. The third one, they discover it can't go down. You know, like submarines are meant to dive. So they look at what could be going on here, and they figure out, no, they're valves in different compartments. And the valves all have to be opened and closed manually because it's a safety feature. If they did it mechanically or electronically and it went wrong, like someone plugged in a vacuum cleaner, everyone would die. So it has to be done. The valve has to be closed. It's up in the ceiling. And they were finding that the reason that this thing couldn't dive was just going round and round False Bay is because the guy who was meant to close and open the valves just wasn't strong enough to do it because they'd stopped doing physical ed. They've stopped doing PT on a Wednesday afternoon. Everybody goes home on a Wednesday afternoon early. They get the afternoon off. So they're loitering around Simonstown Naval Base. And therefore, none of them are strong enough to open or close this valve. This is crazy. Yeah. We've spent billions on these submarines.
The whole arms deal is a
God debacle. Knows what we're ever going to do with these submarines in the first place, even if we were working and they were good. We're not attacking anyone. We should patrol our waters to make sure that they're not being fished to death.
Exactly. That's where they're needed.
Make sure that no one's spilling oil out there. We should make sure that there aren't people doing illegal things in international waters around our country. But that's just an illustration with three submarines of how mismanaged this whole situation
is. That's a microcosm of the bigger issues.
And if we talk about things like ESCOM and SAA and we talk about Transnet and then we get into municipalities and local government, it is a complete destructive collapse. Are these the people we should trust with the purse strings? And are these the people we should give even more power to when it comes to things? And, you know, people like to talk about this. Julius talks about nationalizing this and that. And you hear people saying, well, this needs to be brought under government's control. Clearly and demonstrably, government's the last place you should park anything of value.
Government should not be in the business of business, I've said often. So when it comes to competitive businesses like airlines, get out of it because this is not your speciality. You cannot compete with private airlines. We don't know how to. When it comes to electricity, we're seeing very quickly that the private sector is going to be providing most of the electricity in the next 20 years because coal burning is the worst way you can go now. It's just not efficient. Our power stations are crumbling. Government hasn't maintained them. This is another big problem with government, both local and nationally. We don't know how to maintain our infrastructure. We don't spend the money because maintenance is a long-term thing. You've got to put in plans, and the short-term thinking of government is how do we spend as much money now in other areas, and they do not maintain. So our power stations are literally kept together with elastic bands, so to speak, inverted commas. I mean, they are breaking down, which is why we have these outages as often as we do. They're trying to address that now. So, look, I think Cyril sits in a situation where the learning and the school fees have been paid, and heavily so. He knows that he's got to put in place a competent cabinet. He knows that civil society needs to be worked with. He knows that we are critics and not enemies, and the critics have a lot of good information. We are seeing that coming through. We are seeing the messages of saying we need to get this corruption summit sorted out and do it properly. It was launched in Zuma's days, but it was a false launch. And of course, he didn't want to deal with corruption. So I think we're sensing a sense of urgency, a sense of sincerity and authenticness when it comes to how do we fix the state now. That's a good sign. But then when you see these lists and you see the Nomvula Mokonyanis and the Mosabeng Zizwanis and Faith Matambis of the world, there are charges against these people. But what we do know is that Cyril knows that he is not allowed to interfere. So he puts in place the foundations of the Shamilas to do the work. And that's where we believe the good work's going to come. He's going to then be able to step back when his faction starts accusing him. And he's going to be able to say, I cannot interfere. This is the work that has to be done by these people. And you've got to allow the rule of law to flow. That's what's giving me hope. And if we can get that right and start seeing some of these big fish being caught and held accountable and start to introduce a culture of, if you are corrupt in this country going forward, you are going to suffer the consequences. But what we need is more watchdogs, more people in civil society, because we're only a small organization of 50 people. I mean, we are struggling to do the amount of work. There's no shortage of work for us. There are hundreds and hundreds of cases, but we can only get to so many. We've got 117 projects we've taken on since the ETOL one in the last 3 years. A lot of them are quick, but 67 of those projects are still open. And some of them are going for years. And we shouldn't be having to be doing a government's work here. This is the work that government should be doing. I gave a talk this early in the week to BirdLife South Africa, another conservation group of guys doing amazing work that government should be doing, conservation work. And they struggle to get funds as well. Now, one might say, well, you know, why do you need conservation on birds? You need conservation in every area and every sphere of flora and fauna in this country and the world. Otherwise, we have the bigger problems, which the sustainability of life becomes threatened. So, we have to have a bigger, more active citizenry, and we go back to this corporate world. We need corporate active citizenry as well, because their role, they cannot do business as usual as they have done. They've got to start breaking down these barriers that they've got. They've got to think beyond the balance sheet, beyond the profit sheet, beyond the massive bonuses that they pay each other, and realize that they live in a society that needs their constructive input to stopping the rot, not being part of it. And they haven't got that. I tell you, Cliff, Gareth, what frustrates me is you see an organization like the South African Insurance Industry Association. And the Insurance Industry Association has 40 people working for it. They need to be tackling government when it comes to road safety issues, because your insurance goes up when death rates go up and accidents go up and potholes create more accidents and traffic lights are out. They should be doing great work when it comes to working with government, putting government under pressure to fix the horrific death rate of 15,000 people a year. We're in the lowest quadrant in the world when it comes to road safety. And yet they do very little. And I'm not talking about a couple of pointsmen here and there. This industry association should be talking to its leaders and investing money to hold government to account for the high death rates, which then puts more pressure on the road accident fund, another tax that goes into your fuel. This is absolutely ludicrous. But business sits back, looks the other way and says, it's not my role to do that. I'm just here to do business and make a profit. And that's nonsense. Not in this world. Not today.
I absolutely love it, and I agree that the government must be wrapped over the knuckles every now and again. But how much of the work that you do is society facing? So I can see all of the work that you're doing with the government and talking to the government and trying to get them in line.
Yourself, correct, yeah.
But one of the things that we see, and we often talk about it here on the show, is that we, as the citizens, are also very much, so as individuals, very much to blame for a lot of the problems that we have. So just not stopping at a traffic light, for instance, all of that kind of, it seems like little things, but because everybody is doing it, it snowballs into a big thing. Yeah. So how much of your work is also people facing? So facing civil society about their responsibilities over and above the rights that they have.
Look, as I said, there's so much to do with all these projects. So our mandate's very clear. When it comes to abuse of authority with our tax money and bad policy making, then we get stuck in there. because it's about trying to get the correct the behavior in the spend of the money. So our role is around maladministration and corruption. Of course, there's the issues around what should society be doing differently. But what we try and do is hold government to account. So what we say to government is, you need to make sure that your law enforcement works. You need to get people onto the streets to stop that behavior. And if you don't use the taxes properly, like in local government, Metro Police should be out there stopping that behavior, making sure that taxi drivers and ordinary citizens know that that type of behavior is unacceptable. That's a whole different area, and you know, we believe society needs to also conduct itself properly, but we don't do much there in that space, because if we did, we'd be sidetracked on the limited funds we've got to deal with those issues that we are tackling. And I mean, so the things that we're doing, and you don't really see or hear about, but we stopped the 1.8 billion rand on the Tegeta Rehabilitation Fund from leaving the country when the Bank of Baroda was closing down and the Guptas were already
funneling money out.
Yeah, dipping their hands into that pot as well. We are doing tackling the Department of Water and Sanitation to make sure that they're green and blue drop reports and that we get a water regulator in, because our water security is under massive threat at the moment.
Well, someone tweeted something yesterday and it got me very panicky suddenly. Is it still safe to drink the water?
Yeah, so we tested Gauteng's water. It's still good, and yes, it is safe to drink, but that's not the case in many, many municipalities.
In Paris, in Witbank,
Grahamstown, it's crazy. You just have
Middelburg,
to
drink you can't
bottled
drink
water.
Right.
And I mean, the poor suffer the most when it comes to that, because it's expensive bottled water, and living with your water delivered to you in trucks and buckets, and that. How do you live like this? I mean, and then again, infrastructure has failed, pumps aren't working, reservoirs aren't being filled up, and the water is contaminated now. And that's why ARTS is now branching into local government. We have a local division. It's hard to get this process going, but we're going to try and get into every municipality, do the same thing, hold those municipal managers to account for the maladministration and absolute waste and squandering of residents' money.
Well, ARTA also published a list of booking details recently for various individuals who stayed at a hotel in Dubai, which was funded by the Guptas. They believe that the proof of the bookings helps to shed light on the corrupt relationship the infamous family had with state-owned enterprises and with some government officials.
Yeah.
So who were these people?
Well, you know, Rudy Heinecke is our guy who's in the state capture space, and we got the Gupta leaks and right in the beginning in May 2017. But what's beautiful is we put it into to pay a bit of money to get a IT developer to make sure that we could interrogate all the, because it's not just all the emails, it's the attachments, the emails where the good information is.
Right.
And he dips into this Gupta leaks system that we've set up. He tries to find an hour a day, and he finds all this. There's so much information there. But when you start, as Praveen says, joining the dots. So what he decided to do is just expose this, because in the ethics committees that the government have had already in Parliament, they've excused a couple of people who've explained themselves. I mean, Nene had to, you know, step down because he didn't disclose a meeting he'd had with the Guptas. These people in government have been put up in hotels, and their flights and their transfers have been paid for by the Guptas, and they're looking away and they're ignoring this, but there's a relationship there. So we decided to just raise this again, put all these lists out there, so that the ethics committee can call these people back and say, excuse me, this is not something that we should be overlooking.
And it's not something that you've already told us was excusable.
Yeah, exactly. So there's a lot more answering to be done, and we're continuing to make use of those leaks and other information that we get from whistleblowers to hold the feet to the fire of those politicians.
Go ahead, Pumps.
It sounds like there's a lot of stuff happening in a lot of different places. Mm. So how do you decide where you start?
Well, we've got a project selection process, and we've got investigations department with gets whistleblower information. They do three things. Firstly, they make sure it's within our mandate. It's corruption or maladministration of taxpayers' money, that it is substantive, and that we're not being led up the garden path, because we can see how sometimes they push these red herrings your way, false information. We saw a little while ago, one of the top investigators got a false a bank account of Dudu's, remember, and he had to apologize because he made some claims which were not true. So we've got to make sure that the information we get is factual. Once we get that information, we decide in which portfolio it goes. We've got an energy portfolio, water portfolio, mm-hmm. transport, and so forth. And then the investigators start. We have a preliminary evaluation of the project. And then the committee sits around the table and says, right, we'll do this one, we'll do that one. This is big. There's a good, valuable information here. We can move quickly. Very recently, we got stuff on the lotto and the money that's being spent in the lottery area. My best advice to everybody is starve the lotto. Do not give them 1 cent. The sad thing is that there are some needy organizations on the other side that need their money, but there are a lot of organizations that are just front companies that are being set up, and they're plundering the lotto. And I can tell you, be another story that you probably want to involve and engage one of our portfolio managers on. It is sick that what is happening in the lottery. So that's the type of thing we do. It's just the list is never, and then we start working on those projects. Some of them are quick. Once we go through a 5-step methodology, we investigate properly, and we then engage the powers. We say, excuse me, but what is happening here? Explain yourself. Sometimes you get behavior change there and then. Other times they ignore you, then we expose the powers, we start mobilizing, but all the way we go to that 5th step if we need to. And that's what makes ARTA a bit different. We're not a barking dog, we're a dog with bite. We will take you on. We will interdict you. We will charge you. We will lay criminal complaints against you. And we build solid affidavits. And that is why also we decided when we set up the new ARTA that we would have a legal department, because we're sick and tired of making these law firms rich. We put our own lawyers. We've got our own advocate under Stefani Fick, who heads up a legal team of 6 to 7 people. And they are the legal advisors, and they build these cases quickly. So we can build cases fast and cheap without making lawyers rich, and we can make people feel the heat. And that's how we stopped the BNP Capital deal with SAA very quickly, and stopped some of these wasting of money at these big water conferences when we found out through the exposure program that we got. So it's a multifaceted quiver of lots of arrows that we take out.
And how do you make sure, you know, we were talking about politicians and the fact that they're all self-serving in one way, and something that's talked about a lot in South Africa is that there are many factions in not just the ANC, but in almost all the political parties.
Yeah.
So how do you ensure that you don't get caught up in factional battles? Because some cases will definitely discredit a particular group of politicians, and other cases a different group of politicians.
Yeah.
So how do you ensure that you don't get used?
Yeah, you're right.
To fight factional battles, because
or even ideological ones. Yeah. You know, that suddenly it becomes about ARTA needs to represent X, Y, and Z that they're not representing, or ARTA needs to adopt these ideological ideas, or. Because that can very quickly happen too.
Absolutely right. So we've got to continuously remain apolitical. We do not, doesn't matter who's in power. So we're tackling some things in the city of Tshwane and Joburg. These are DA-run municipalities and metros as well. And we've just got to make sure that we cannot allow ourselves to be aligned to any political affiliation, any ideological affiliation. Our work has to be very true to the mandate that we have, and we've got to go and tackle the issue that we uncover. So we don't allow ourselves to be sucked into stuff like that. And it's not easy. You've got to continuously sift through all the nonsense. Make sure you're not being fed the wrong information as well. But fortunately, the information that comes to us from these whistleblowers, that inside the organization, they're ex-staff members, they've got the procurement contracts there, they feed that information to us, they show us the money that's being spent. We get recordings, we get photocopies of contracts, we get photographs of people in meetings and that, which is nice with technology today, that guides us in making sure that we tackle the right things.
So have you got some funding? I mean, obviously you're always looking for more, who isn't, but are people signing up and contributing regularly?
Yeah, Gareth, the challenge for all civil society organizations is funding. As I said, we were poor right in the beginning. For the first 3 years, we didn't pull salaries, only three of us working at ARTA.
Mm-hmm.
We were paying lawyers massive fees for that initial case where we tried to stop it in the courts, and we did successfully interdict it, and then the courts just became so technical. But we got a good favorable ruling. Anyway, that cost us a lot of money. And then we met some good guys who helped us take our own blinkers off and find ways to fund what was then initially, we would stand by society so long as we had funds if there were summons. That was the whole thing on ETALS.
Mm-hmm.
And then we were asked, as you indicated sort of earlier on, there's so much else happening out there, Arthur. Why are you just fighting ETALS? And we said to the public, we will do more if we get more. We will change our brand name from the Opposition to Urban Tolling Alliance, and we kept the same acronym and put in the organization Undoing Tax Abuse. Mm-hmm. It fitted the mandate, and we'd do as much as we could so long as we were funded. And the one fundamental change, which came from a good guy who was part of our team at the time, was that we should not allow one-off funding, that when people donate to us, they need to sign debit orders, because you cannot pay salaries once off a rent and stuff like that. And that's what the next thing we decided to do is, you can't run these organizations on volunteers. You need professionals with longevity because these cases take a long time. So, and they need to be passionate about the work. And if they're here today, gone tomorrow, we can't do our work. No. So we decided to get in the right people, pay them market related salaries, set yourself up properly. So we got offices, and allow people to, rather than give us R1,000 a year, give us R100 a month. Because that way we can know how much we can commit ourselves to paying salaries. And salaries is 60-70% of our cost. The rest is building litigation war chests so we can move fast when we go and challenge government. And I think we've successfully done that. So now it's about, we've got these 50 people, but we need 60, we need 70, we need 100, actually, and especially in local government. And so we're getting in, but we barely, we spend all of that money on the work that we do.
Do you still take in people who want to volunteer? So if a person were to volunteer a certain number of hours every month for a year,
but you've got to manage volunteers. You've got to know, well, where are they? Can they do all of this work now? Because you can't put your work on hold. When you're building, looking for PIA applications and evaluating information and that, it's not a stop-start affair. So the volunteers that have got some time, it's almost permanent time. And then are they prepared to do it for next to nothing? And normally that's not the case. So it's tough, and you've got to manage volunteers' time. Are you in today? No, I'm not in. I'll be coming in tomorrow. Okay, well, we need to do this today. And it's really tough trying to run an organization on volunteers. So it's not like we turn it away. It's just that it's hard to manage.
I saw Zandile Gumede, who's the eThekwini mayor, she handed herself into the Hawks the other day. So that's progress of a kind, where at least someone isn't doing what so many people do in that situation, where they caught with their hands in the till, is they go, no, it's not me.
Yeah.
You know, the cookie jar is still attached to their hand. Yeah. And they're going, no, I didn't take anything. Yeah. At least with her, she's handed herself over. Now, what's going to happen there, do you think?
We think we've called for her to step down. We're putting pressure now on the authorities to have her step aside. But they must now put the pressure on. I think from the evidence and what we see, she's going to have to face the music and go to jail. And this is the ANC now having to self-correct. She should not be there. They should be removing her. So we start to worry, if you're true to this fight against corruption, why are you moving so slowly? And not only her, there are many.
See, this is what I find problematic about everyone's fave, but Tamila, is like,
well,
for me.
It's not my fave, but yeah, go ahead.
But for me, this is a simple thing where you have a person who's now going through a legal system. And within his role as the leader of the party, he is well within his right to call his executive in KZN to say, right, guys, we have a problem with this individual here. We don't necessarily have to pronounce her guilty, but what we can do is we can move this person, put her on whatever, take her off the portfolio and say, for the sake of A, allowing this individual to concentrate on their defense or what it is that they have to put out there, we are removing them from this position so that they can concentrate on that without it impacting on what needs to happen in the job and in the portfolio every day. Also, so that we are not seen to be having any kind of hampering. I mean, leadership 101. And here's a person who's, you know, supposedly a business mogul who's grown this empire of what, and that he couldn't do that.
Yeah.
Come on.
Yeah. No, you're quite right.
I mean, she was in the dock the day before. The next day, she's at a press conference with Danny Jordan.
As mayor of Durban.
The next day, she's at a press conference as the mayor of Durban.
It's
sick. No, talking COSAFA Cup.
Not in any other world.
But there's Danny Jordan, who himself is can't fly internationally because he'll be arrested.
Yeah, but
if he hops on a plane, the guy will be clapped in irons. It's ridiculous.
Yeah. We've got too much of this, and we've got to clean it up.
So Pumi brought something up earlier. I mean, do you really think, when you look at South Africa, because government is often a reflection of society. You get the government you deserve. Do you think civil society is good? Because, you know, people, they rally against Jacob Zuma, let's say, 2 years ago, whatever it was. And everybody's thrilled when he gets removed from office. But otherwise, everything carries on. And people are involved in nefarious deeds and activities. And we've got criminals living openly among us. You know, there are people that say that South Africa is a haven for these guys that were willing to break the rules because our police are so inefficient. And the NPA is so useless and inefficient. I don't think they've managed to put anyone away in the last couple of months.
No, watch Shamila. I think she's the right person for the job. Is civil society doing enough? I think we need a lot more. But that's the problem, is that we're losing talent. We're losing a lot of people leaving the country. We've got to build this country, and we've got to build a strong civil society. And I think, thank goodness, we have the corruption watchers, the Section 27s of the world, Helen Suzman Foundations, and the Outers of the world, because it's collectively, although we do different work, we have different mandates, different boards, and that, there is a lot that's being done. But there needs a lot more to be done. So that's why we come back to calling on society. You know, if you can't be an active citizen, then support an organization that is doing the work on your behalf. And the corporate society, you cannot keep looking away. You've got to participate. And it doesn't help just ticking the CSI box and saying, no, well, I've given a bit of money and we've put some money into that school and we went and did this garden.
67 minutes.
Yeah. I mean, this is superficial stuff on the surface. They've got to get deep in. They've got to allocate more of their funds to organizations that are doing amazing good work in schools and dealing with the educational constraints and drugs in communities, and that the work that government should be doing. And we shouldn't have to exist. I can tell you right now, ATA shouldn't have to sit here and be here. So we're here not because we're bored and we've got nothing to do. We're here because we're passionate about it and there's so much to do. All of our guys at ATA could be working in the business world, earning good salaries as well. But we're here because we've got to work. So I think we need more. And I can tell you now that if we get the local division right, with hundreds of people inside local municipalities holding those people to account, we can turn these towns around and these cities. And so I don't think we're doing enough, but it's not because of a lack of will. It's because of a lack of funding and people to come on board.
What's happened to people like who's the SANRAL guy who was in charge, who was so loud
Nazir.
On TV?
Nazir Ali. Yeah.
What's happened to
Nazir
him?
Ali.
Where's he these days?
on the board of PRASA.
Where's Iqbal Sharma? Where's Brian Molefe? Where are these people who we know were in the thick of this corruption and we're in the thick of the ETOL debacle?
Yeah.
And how much personal responsibility do they take, and have they taken?
Well, they in Nazir Ali's case in ETOLs, there was just the most ludicrous decision.
What happened?
Well, they chose a system that they thought would work, which would not in a month of Sundays would ever come to fruition. You do not open the world's biggest and set up the world's biggest electronic pay now or drive now, pay later scheme when eNATIS is incorrect. It's got so much wrong with it. When you rely on the post office, so you got a bad postal system. When you relied on an enforcement process and regulations, which were never in place. So you put all of these things together and you look at him, you're saying, what were you thinking? Of course, there's this, as we said, extra billion rand a year. Like, so something...
Is he just living in his house? Is he just doing day-to-day things? Is he going shopping? What's he doing?
See, this is my thing about where we can also participate just on an individual level.
Mm.
Is as the neighbors, as the community around, people should be...
intolerant of this.
But we should exclude individuals. They should not be comfortable to be within our midst. They cannot be living their lives driving their Bentleys
after ripping us off. So we should be doing, as a
society, and it's, you know, it's kind of like concentric circles and it ripples out. Is if we are intolerant at the, it's the same as the sweeping of your street, right? If we are
micro level,
all intolerant at every level, like if you're my neighbor, I'm not like waving and smiling at you and laughing with you.
Mm-mm.
You should not be able to walk into church with the rest of us and we are okay with you and shake your
should
hand.
Be a shame.
You should not be able to walk through the malls without, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Without someone looking at you dirtily.
Like, you should be pelted with banana peels.
So I can tell you that the exposure that goes out there, these guys do have an uncomfortable life. Brian Molefe, and we get the feedback from people, they do not live the way they used to. They are, I mean, they shouldn't be where they are. They should be in jail, and they shouldn't have the funds that they have, and they shouldn't be able to drive anyway. But nonetheless, they're embarrassed, you know. This is the beauty about the media and social media. These people that we expose have families, have kids that come home and say, "Daddy or mommy, gee, I was, you know, my mates at school tell me that you're a thug and a crook," and they feel uncomfortable. I can assure you, the feedback that we get from some of these guys, they don't go to functions anymore. Society has ostracized them. Their families ostracize them.
Good.
It's small pain, but it's necessary pain.
It's close.
That is big pain. Close, that is big pain, because that's what people want. People want
some
to
of them
be,
are thick-skinned and they just switch off, but they
people
they,
want to be loved and accepted. Yeah. People want to be you know, acknowledged. Yeah. People, it's a big pain.
Yeah.
And do we ever go after the money?
Yes, and we should. Certainly on the Gupta's case, when we start putting out the extradition.
Sorry to interrupt you, but just, do you remember Vusi Mona going on TV and telling us all that we were criminals and we're going to come and get you? And he's threatening us.
Yeah, they threatened.
That guy was all over the media telling you he was coming after you. He's going to get you. We're going to put you in jail.
Yeah.
Innocent citizens.
Idiotic. Yes. Idiotic, eh? And the beauty is we got that question asked in Parliament, and Dipuo Peters had to answer it, and because she knew she'd be lying if she said, yes, we can criminalise you. And she said, no, we're not going to make criminals of you. And what happened? That's when the whole slide started happening, because people now realise those threats were hollow. And we made a meal out of that, and then we put pressure in. Makura said, yeah, they're going to have that panel. And the minute that happened, there was more levels of authority that were questioning the system, and they started dying fast. And then we set up the ETOL defense umbrella and said, we'll defend you if you get a summons. And now they're only getting 60 million rand a month. They need 300 to run this.
I want to know who those poor people are who are still being
They are businesses. This is the thing again.
Car rental companies.
They are too scared to cross swords with government. Otherwise, they'll get struck off the procurement rolls, and it pisses me off.
Well, that's probably why it's a good thing you're not there anymore.
No, but this is the thing, right? If there are six car rental companies and they all provide some kind of fleet, if all six of them were not willing to provide the fleet, the problem is that
they should have stood strong.
They won't stick together. Yeah. They won't stick together.
Someone will fall.
Well, they tried, but government lent on them. One fell, and then the next, and then the procurement deals start.
Then we should all stop using them as civil society. And the fact is, use an Uber. I don't. When I go to Cape Town now, I Uber around. Yeah. I don't rent a car anymore.
Yeah. Those Uber guys don't have e-tags. It's lovely.
No, they don't.
Every time I use one, I say, I'm so glad you don't have an e-tag, and they just laugh at e-tags.
Sure. Well, Wayne, again, congratulations on all the work that Auto has done so far. Just one quick thing, because a lot of people are still confused. Yeah. There was a time where Makosi Kwaza was going to come in and be a part of what Auto was doing. Then she wasn't.
Yeah.
It almost felt a bit like that whole Ahang DA thing that happened a few years ago. What happened there?
She's a good woman. At the time, she was setting up ADEC, and then Ramaphosa got in, and people who were funding it said, look, let's see what happens with this new dawn. We don't need a new political party. I'd met with her. She said, I love the work you're doing. I said, why don't you join us? We're going into this local space. She was a huge advocate for fighting corruption. She spent about 9 months with us giving good insights and input. Then she said, look, Wayne, the elections are coming. I want to give ADEC another shot. She'd been hunted by them. She's also doing other good work in education and black languages. And so we said, fine. So we still got a great relationship. She went off. ADEC didn't take off. I haven't called her since the elections have happened, so we'll have a chat. But no, she's moved on. Civil society, it's a different space. It's not really a comfortable space for politicians. And good luck. I mean, she's a great woman. I've got to take my hat off to her.
Yeah, also brave.
Yeah.
Well, thank you. Outer can be found on all their social media handles. You can also contribute to them, become a member. And that way, as you guys have said, if you are a member and
you get a summons, Sanral
come after you, yeah. They'll take care of it. So at least you can rest assured someone will look after you. You don't have to go to the trouble of paying millions of rands in some cases to lawyers.
And just to thanks to society who does support us, thanks to active citizens who stand strong and have the moral courage, and thanks to a great team of people at ARTA, because this is not a one-man show. This is about teamwork, and certainly couldn't do it. And the people that have come before, we've had people that have come and gone. They've done some good work.
Well done to you, Wayne. Thanks so much. Thanks for Wayne Duvenage, you can find him and ARTA on social media. There's Twitter, there's Instagram, there's Snapchat, there's Facebook, there's their website. You can go and take a look and contribute today to get them some support for the very good work that they do for you, whether you are aware of it or not.
Yeah, outa.co.za.
There we go, outa.co.za.
Thanks
so much, Wayne.
Thanks for your time.
This is CliffCentral.com.